Shut up and sit down.
Welcome to the Health and Wealth Podcast with your hosts, Tim and Carter.
What's trending in Richards? Carter Wilcoxon, founder of CSI Financial Group here, with my co-host and former wealth advisor, Tim James, founder of
ChemicalFreeBody.com and your new health advisor. This is the show where we reveal the connection between physical and financial abundance.
That's the theme today. Connection, people.
Yeah, connection. That'll be good. Hey,
in Richards, we're all connected.
Yes, in Richards, we are all connected. And, you know, the purpose of this podcast is to have a little bit of fun, right, and get to know one another. And I'm very excited about our guest today, one of our younger advisors that we started a relationship with about maybe 3 months ago. And whenever we first started our relationship, Mason Morozas of Synergy Techs, I'm not sure exactly.
TX stands for Texas, but yeah. Basically Synergy is kind of a good blanket term.
Yeah. So Synergy, which is, here we go. We're talking about, you know, being connected. Well, that's right. You're synergistic, then obviously that's the purpose, is being connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Mason is a true blue rock chalk Jayhawk. And whenever I got introduced to him, I'm like, that is awesome. Because as Aaron Richards have heard in the past, you know, I moved out here 25 years ago from Kansas City. I inherited the Chiefs, which we're probably going to talk a little bit about their bye week that they had. My wife said, oh, looks like the Chiefs had a bye week this week. They decided not to show up. So you know, I inherited the Chiefs. And then, of course, you know, Lawrence is not that far away from Kansas City. And, you know, you inherit the Jayhawks. And I was there in 88 with Danny and the Miracles. So whenever I found out that Mason was entertaining being a guest on the podcast, I was really excited. So, Mason, how are you doing today?
I'm great. And let me brag on you for a second, Carter. I know we just talked about this, but, you know, just out off the bat, first impressions matter. And when I first met Carter, all I heard was our Rock Chalk theme song before your picture even came up on the screen. So I was blown away, put you in a better mood. And it's another tool in my toolbox for, you know, now this new virtual world that we're in with Zoom meetings and doing your research on someone and making a good first impression. But yeah, everything's good besides our Chiefs, like you just hit on.
Yeah, not so good. And I would imagine that your fantasy team maybe didn't do so good yesterday either.
No, Tyreek and Kelsey, having both of them, it wasn't the best, but that's all right. You know, I like to say I like my own number, my own name on my back of the jersey. So I have no control over the Chiefs. I can't control my own life and kind of the business. So I keep that as a reminder, even though I am a very passionate fan.
Yeah, that's awesome. So in Richards, sit back, get ready to learn about Mason, who is a Jayhawk through and through, but he happens to be in Texas now. I've learned a lot about him in our short interview vetting process, whatever you want to call it. So Mason, Aaron Richards, we like to go back to, like, you know, the beginning. What was it about your, you know, financial journey that you decided, you know what, I think that might be something for me? Because you're a fairly young guy, I think mid-20s, right? Just graduated not too long ago from KU. So why don't you take us back to sort of the beginning and the influencer or influencers that kind of helped you to go this direction?
Sure. Yeah, I think it starts about 12 years old. I remember, you know, there was a group of me and I want to say 6 or 7 buddies that at 12 years old, we could go start earning income, getting a job by umpiring softball. You know, and you're starting from ground zero, the machine pitch, you're the only one out there. And, you know, at that time, I think this is correct, but it was paying $30 a game. And that's good money when you're 12 years old, man, especially doing 8 games on a Saturday. And I ate it up. Like, I loved it. And, you know, like I said, there was probably 6 or 7 other friends of mine that did it as well. And I realized, you know, after a couple of weeks, whether they were regular season games or the tournament weekends, you know, where you can make really good money, 30 times 8 times another 8 on Sunday of games. That's a lot of money when you're 12. But I realized that, you know, me, I took those paychecks and shoved them into my regular savings account that I had just opened at the bank with my parents. And then my coworkers, you know, at the time, they were buying the brand new Ripstick or the brand new bicycle, whatever it was at that time, you know, that everyone liked to spend their money on. But I kind of recognized that early, and I'm not trying to put anyone down for that, because you got to live, you got to have fun too. But I realized I had an innate ability or innate willingness to save money, to watch my child regular savings account just increase. And I loved it. I don't even know why. It was just, I kind of created a good habit. And seeing that other people weren't that way, I realized at a young age that there's a need for this. There's a need for, you know, teaching people how to save, whether that be emergency savings for their future, for anything. So, you know, fast forward a little bit to high school, still had the same habits, but then I kind of realized that I was blessed. I got very, very fortunate. You know, my parents, kind of the same group of guys, they all went to a Catholic middle school, and they're all going to the Catholic high school, and I played sports with them, and I just wanted to, but it was private. And again, I have great parents. They made it work. The tuition that was not planned for, but kind of fast forwarding to then, I would see some of these parents or these friends' houses that I would go over to, that they did it right. You know, they had a lot. They were giving back to the community. And I realized then too, you know, the importance of, they probably figured out saving and investing and kind of making smart money moves. And I realized even more in depth that I wanted to learn more about it. So, you know, fast forward, went to KU, got my finance degree, and then got pretty lucky with, you know, my dad got into the business 6 years prior, 6 years ago today. So it was kind of within that time frame when I was in college, about a sophomore. And then he met Michael Hosford, which is the reason I'm down here in Texas, who was a top 1% advisor in the world. And I got the training from the best after that point, after the finance degree and 6 months of just going with him. I learned, you know, 22 years worth of experience from him, from one of the top in the field, and just trying to translate it myself, even though I've only been doing it for 2-3 years. I got lucky in that regard, but I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be doing this and still learning and growing every single day up until this point.
Nice. So, so obviously you went to KU, and you went to, you know, a fairly good, you know, school and everything. How do you think any of your athletics played a role in what it is that you kind of sort of do now? Did that help at all? Like that maybe team environment or team, you know, feeling and being on part of a team, because you're on a team now financially, right? Tell me, did some of those like athletics that you played growing up, did you think that helped?
Absolutely. I mean, just like you said, the team environment, the team aspect, I don't think anyone can do it by themselves. You know, I mean, I think it's necessary, the experience, the training. Someone's already done it before and someone's done it better. So if you can kind of compile those heads together, whether that's on the baseball field, the basketball court, whatever, you're going to win. You kind of need that team mentality.
So let's talk a little bit about your athletic prowess as you were growing up. What were the some of the sports that you played and the positions you played? Let's talk a little bit about, you know, from, you know, junior high through high school through college.
Sure. I really did the big three up until kind of sophomore, junior year of high school. So basketball, football, baseball. And I, for some reason, I'll always have a love for baseball. And I think kind of going on top of your team one, baseball to me is the most individual sport, but within a team aspect that there is. You're always going to get your moment. So just like any other team, you could be dragged down by one person, or you could just, one person could shine, but you need everyone. You know, you need the pitcher on the mound. You need the top nine through the batting order. But I think that's the reason I love baseball the most, kind of to play. And I stuck with that. I think one of my proudest accomplishments was winning state my junior year in Kansas. And, you know, that's something I'll have with me forever. I actually won on my birthday, kind of a little cool, fun thing to tell people. Wow. But being number one and winning that junior year was fun. And just, you know, really same goes along with basketball and football, even though I didn't carry those on and as long as I probably should have, or looking back, might be some of my only regrets, but all three of those sports I just loved. I still love them to this day.
And so what position did you play on your high school team that won state?
Up until junior, even through junior year, I was a pitcher and outfielder. Then my senior year, I just stuck to outfield. Part of the reason we won state was three of those kids got drafted to the MLB. Wow. So I put my glove away for pitching and kind of just tried to help them as I could out there in the outfield. But yeah, there was a pretty good squad there.
Wow. So your championship game, okay, this is your junior year. You've won all these games. You've had a great season and everything, and it's game time. What did you feel like? What's your preparation, Mason, prior to that game? What was the nerves like before that game? And then of course, tell us how it ended. Like, what was the final score and stuff like that?
Sure. Good nervous energy. You know, I think you can compile that. You can feel it within yourself, but you have to control any type of energy or motivation or anything that you have, because you got to dial it in and focus when, you know, the first pitch comes or when it's time to go. So really, you know, it was a three game once we got to state. In the first one, I think we only won 2-1, and it was a walk off in the bottom of the seventh inning. So a lot of those nerves got out of there, and we were much more relaxed as a team for the second and then the final state game. And I think we controlled it pretty well and ended up winning 6-1 in that one and kind of dominated the whole game. But it was, you know, as it got closer, as each inning went by, we could feel it coming closer, but had to keep the composure and get the job done. But yeah, it's really just relaxing and focusing that nervous energy where it needs to go.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you mentioned something earlier, and I kind of want to get your take on this, because I've said this for a really, really long time, that and I don't know about private. I went to public school my entire life growing up and everything. But what was it like in school, and what do you think schools are missing when it comes to teaching financial aspects? I mean, something as easy as understanding what a checking account is or saving account is or taxes or I mean, it's really I'll be 50 in January, so it was really lacking in public school back then. But you know, give me your take on what you think real education should include, as far as I'm concerned, financial aspects of what the real world is going to be necessary to be successful. What's your take on that?
Let's do this because I think this is a really important question.
Yes.
We need to take a break, because I think this is going to fill up a lot of, I have some questions about this too, because there's definitely a lack there. So why don't we take a quick break, and when we get back, let's get into Carter's question, because there's obviously some holes in financial education in our school systems when we're looking at 70% of the population having less than $400 in savings. We'll be right back.
Estate planning. What does that even mean? When the inevitable happens for everyone on this planet, your estate plan kicks into action. But first, let's start with what an estate is. An estate is simply everything you own. Now, here's the issue and what needs to be understood when this event occurs. You only have two choices on this plan. Number one, either you plan how your estate gets handed out and distributed to those you leave behind. Or number two, your state decides who gets everything you own. For the first time ever, you can now take complete and total control of this plan that you've been deprived of for most of your life and generations before you. You can get personalized assistance along the way with a team of specialists whose job it is to make sure you have true peace of mind. It's important to understand that estate planning is a journey, and rest assured that our team will be available to you all along the way and at every step. Welcome to eState Plan, home of the last estate plan you'll ever need. To learn more, make sure to reach out to your local advisor licensed with us, or go to our website for more information.
What's up in Richards? Tim James here. I'm back with my co-host Carter Wilcox. And today in the house, we've got Mason Morozis, financial advisor extraordinaire. Man, you're going to help a lot of people. And unfortunately, most of us going through, high school, even before then, grade school, we learn math. We learn some basic math. That's really important. But they really don't teach us much about finances, how to grow your finances and protect them. It's one thing to make it. The other thing is to keep it, and taxes and all this stuff. So Carter brought up a really big, good question before the break. And so why don't we get into that? What is your take on the educational system and what they're feeding our kids with the education as far as finances goes?
Yeah, I think there's a huge lack of understanding when it comes to that. But throughout the whole system, public, private schools, I never learned how much I should have an emergency savings account when I was in sixth grade or eighth grade or senior year of high school. I never learned that, you know, a credit card is a beautiful thing. It's a great thing if you don't abuse it. And if you don't have that set up, you don't have a credit score established, even throughout college, I was never taught this. Then you cannot go buy a car or a house as easily. Establishing good credit, getting the savings going, the power of, you know, high schoolers, the power of time that they have to grow money is just not taught. You know, when I learned all of these things, I'll kind of jump in back real quick. I remember early on, my dad, who I said was in this, you know, had a very influential quote to me. I don't even know if he knows it, but I remember I finished the series, How I Met Your Mother. I don't even know why. And I was proud of it. I told him this and he said, you know, that's awesome. What if you would have used that time to be learning or reading or doing one of these things? And, you know, like I said, my passion has always been money, saving money efficiently. So I started finding those books. I think this was around eighth grade, freshman year of high school, just Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Psychology of Money, all of these books that we've all heard of. And I just started diving into those and realized that all of these things that I learned were from there, from personal education, not from the school system. And that kind of bothered me. You know, I was shocked to hear some of the questions I would get from people early on in this business, or some of the, not even to their own fault, but just the lack of understanding on very basic principles of how to save, why to save, where to put money, that we just weren't taught. It was pretty concerning to me, and it still is.
So what I'm hearing, Mason, is it hasn't changed, right? It hasn't changed that whether it's public or private or whatever, they're still teaching the core stuff, right? Science, math, social studies, whatever the case may be. And the lack of financial education is do you almost feel like that's on purpose?
I got to be careful there, because I do sometimes. I really do. And I'll even take it a step further. My finance degree that, you know, I paid good money for from KU, I don't regret it at all. But, you know, I didn't, where that really helped me in this field was kind of just learning some terminology, some of these things that helped me pass these securities exams a little bit better. It was nothing about how do you save your money? How do you create a plan for yourself? You know, nothing like that in a very higher education, you know, college degree. But I do feel like it's on purpose sometimes, but I don't know why, or I don't know the reason behind it. You know, and honestly, all the better for me. It just makes me more motivated to want to help anyone and everyone, especially people young in their career or getting going or on the verge of retirement that haven't done anything. Just set something aside, get a real plan going, because they're not taught it elsewhere.
Yeah. So that it really is bad. And Tim, I know that, you know, prior to break and everything, that you had some questions. So I don't want to hog, because I could keep asking these lines of questions over, you know, for the next 30 minutes. So why don't you jump in, Tim, and ask a few questions of Mason yourself?
Sure. Well, I think what his experience was is that, you know, he's 20 years younger than us. So it just goes to show that not much has changed in the educational system. It's not probably going to change unless we, the working people, unite and we change it. Because nothing ever good in our country has ever come top down. And if people have studied political theory, you know, you will find this to be true. So all the gains that we've experienced as Americans, and for other people listening that might be in other parts of the world, any gains have always been from working people saying, that's enough. This is what we want. You need to give us this. Otherwise, we're not going to show up for work, you know? And that's how we got out of slave wages. That's how we got the 8-hour workday. That's how we got the children out of the labor force. That's how we got clean water, bridges, infrastructure, you know, roads, sanitation, all this kind of stuff. So it's system science, Mason. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. They're system scientists, and they're hired by people in control to create these situations for us. They're basically grooming the population the way they want it. They want to funnel us all back into their model. And, you know, we've gotten lazy and we've got entertained. So, you know, since the 1970s, we've stopped striking. We've stopped doing what we need to do, and we've lost our gains. This is a crazy one to think about. somebody making $50,000 today should, based on GDP growth since 1970, should be making $120,000 a year. So $50,000 annually should be making $120,000. Where'd the $70,000 go of your money? Where'd it go? It went upriver because you stopped striking. From 1900 to 1970, 200 million Americans striked. And from 1970 until today, 2 to 5 million have striked. So we stopped striking when these labor unions came in from the Democratic Party and they stifled the true working class labor unions and they stopped striking and we stopped. And then for those listening, this went hand in hand. The Republicans labored the working class movement as communism. So the Democrats and Republicans work together. They are one, but they give the illusion that they're separate. And then that's all part of the left versus right and to get us divided against each other too. So as we start learning this political acumen and we start raising our consciousness, then we can move back towards uniting as working people and getting those ill-gotten. They take our money away from us, basically. I mean, what would a family do? Like, let's say you're working with somebody and they're making $50,000 a year scraping by. What do you think an extra $70,000 in income would do for them for the same amount of work? Right?
Yep.
Do you guys remember, like, there was a time there, remember in the 40s and 50s when things were, like, booming, 50s, 60s, things were booming, and one person could go out and make a great income, buy a home, cars, one stayed home and took care of the kids and shared with the kids and kept those kids and their moral values, and there was more community and stuff, and now it's kind of like mom and dad have been forced out of the household, the kids are being raised by the state, and they're being raised by child. You know, yeah, I was paying $900 per child to drop them off at a daycare, and you don't really know what the hell's going on. You know what they're doing, and they're giving them genetically modified crackers and government cheese. I mean, it's not good, right? It's a broken down system, and so this is all by design to destroy the nuclear family. And of course, look at the results. I mean, there's just so many fatherless boys, girls, and kids, and we've got, you know. Like I said, 22.4% unemployment and less than or 70% of our – gosh, dang it, 70% of us, think about that, have less than $400 in savings. That's pretty spooky.
That's hard to fathom.
Yeah.
Pretty spooky. You're talking about an emergency fund, you know, having 3 to 6 months worth of your, you know, monthly budget or monthly nut in an easy-to-access account or cash. And they got $400. So that basically means that, you know, the water heater goes out and they're screwed.
Yep.
One thing, one incident, boom. Right. So, yeah, we have a major problem. We have a huge problem going on.
Well, I want to tie this sort of back into something that Mason talked about earlier. And you just said it, right? We've been entertained. You go to your dad and you're like, Dad, I ended up watching the entire How I Met Your Mother. And he was like, he didn't say it like you wasted all your time. He said, well, what could you have done had you done? And really what he's talking about is he wasn't talking about education. He was talking about knowledge, right? That's the difference. Education and knowledge are not one and the same.
Yep. And yeah. Personal knowledge too. And just real quick, Tim, I might throw a question at you just off the cusp, but what do you think? I saw a stat the other day that, you know, 1 in 4 people in this past year have quit their jobs. Now, I know that's not technically a strike or anything like that, but I think a lot of my generation, you know, 20 new career, if they don't like it, now they're just leaving, you know, or they're trying to find something new and maybe go get paid more in a different field like tech or finance or something that is offering more than where they were originally at, just making cold call sales or something like that. But 1 in 4 have left their jobs in the past year. Where do you think that takes us, or where do you think we're headed just with that? I'm picking your brain now.
Well, that depends. I mean, there's probably a certain amount of those people that have left because they don't want to wear a mask or because it doesn't make them feel good. Or they don't want to get jabbed. I mean, I talked to a lot of people like that. There's probably another segment, like you said, there's just people that are getting into these jobs. They don't like it. So they're quitting. And it's been easier lately because of COVID, because a lot of people can just jump on, you know, and get unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, why would I? I mean, I remember vividly. Okay, guys, when I was a financial advisor, I had this one lady. She came in and no offense, but like she was a construction worker and she looked like she could kick my butt. something happened to her. She got like an injury or something. And then, but you know, she healed. And I was like, she's like, yeah, I got this $25,000 in cash. I'm living in government housing. My son just moved in, and basically with him in there, I basically get an extra $400 allowance. Like, and then the government housing, you can pay your rent or you don't pay your rent, or you basically pay the amount you think you can afford. It was just like weird thing. And so she got extra money from her son coming in, and she was going through this stuff, and I was like, okay. And then I'm like, so I said, are you feeling better now? You're healthy? And she's like, yeah, I feel good. I'm like, so when are you going to get back to work? She's like, well, you know, I thought, start adding it all up. And she goes, from this and getting that and this and that and housing, she goes, it actually makes more sense for me to not go to work. There's no incentive. She goes, I actually can make a little bit more than what I was making when I was working, and I can just do what I want every day. So she goes, I don't see myself really going back to work anytime soon. And she was totally, completely, physically, mentally available to go back and contribute. And that's kind of a natural law that the system is going against. You either contribute or you go away in nature, right? You're part of contributing and growth and the evolution and growing. Things either grow or they die. So the system is kind of set up under that, like, you know, don't worry about it. We'll take care of you. And then that puts more burden on the people out there working because they're taking our tax dollars and people are living on our backs. Right. And that's not mm-hmm. really cool. That's not fair. And it actually goes against the natural law. So then after a while, a lot of people are just like, well, why the hell should I work then too? I'm going to go get the free government cheese. Like why would I kill myself to help all this stuff? So it demoralizes the other people that are still working. So I think we're going through a shift right now. I think the most important thing for kids to do today is to do what you did, is start self-educating. And unless you're going to college for something very specific, I think you should avoid college at all costs. These are indoctrination camps. And what are you really going to get out of it after 4 years or 5 years? And you're going to have a big, you know, a government student loan you're going to have to start paying on. And, you know, instead of getting a job for $10 an hour, they might give you $11.15. That's pretty much it. That's not $1.15 is not going to really make a big difference in your life. Right. And when you go to school anyway, a lot of it's boring. I mean, was there a lot of classes that you had to take that you're just like, oh my God, this stuff sucks?
I'm probably the biggest proponent. Most of them for me, you know, if I'm not personally interested in it, or I'm not going to go create a marketing plan or do this and that. That's not what I'm good at. That's not what I'm passionate at. It was hard for me to pay attention to any of those, you know, or
it's
just kind of
boring.
Yeah. I wanted to do anything boring. Other than get by.
Yeah. You just get by, get your grades and move on so you can get your degree. And then what? Then you go off and do whatever. Right. And like you said, you got your degree, and you know, what percentage of what you learned at college are you using today in your life and your real career dealing with people?
Less than 20%.
20%. How much was that education?
Now I could say a lot of that network that are my clients currently, that is something mm-hmm. I did get from college. So that's probably not into that calculation, but from the actual classroom
right. Of
learning these terms and whatnot, it's pretty low, I would have to say.
You actually brought up another good point, because somebody told me a long time ago, they said, hey, it's not about what you learn at college. It's about the connections you make for business mm-hmm. down the road. That's what it's really about. So that's why a lot of the dads and stuff will fight to get their friends or their kids into these fraternities and stuff, because you build this brotherhood. And then when you all go out, you know, a percentage of those guys are going to go kick some butt in life, and then they're going to stay in touch and help each other. I see that all the time. But the reality is, as far as education goes, it's a failed model too, because it goes against nature. And our natural instincts are to do what excites us the most. And what excites me is different than what excites Carter, which is different than excites you. So you know, there was a quote down there I saw. It said, you said, it's not the amount that counts, it's the plan that counts, by Jim Rohn, right? But yep. Do you remember another guy named Zig Ziglar?
Of course.
Okay, he's really cool. Have you ever listened to him talk?
All the time, yep. My dad does a great impression of him, but I'll say
That's cool. I should listen to him. I might probably botch the impression, but he was like, I remember, I don't know if you remember, there was the story he told that he was like, he had a really bad day. He woke up and he was late to work, late to get to the office, and then he was like backing out of his driveway, and then he looked and he had a freaking flat tire. So, you know, he's suit and tie, and he's fixing the flat tire, And then just as he's leaving, his wife's like, honey, don't forget when you get home, you said you're going to clean out the garage. Oh, yeah, no problem, honey. And then he went to work, and then he shows up at work, and it was like, you know, 95 degrees out, and the air conditioner failed. So he's in there sweating bullets all day long, calling, trying to get the air conditioning guy to get it fixed, and he just fixed it, and it broke again. And then he said, finally, he goes, I had this big client that we had just closed, and there was a voicemail, and I missed his call, and it said, hey, partner, you know, we decided to go a different direction. Don't call me, I'll call you. And he basically lost this big account. So, I mean, he just got beat up from the time he woke up until there, he lost this big account, his air conditioner, he had to fix that, more money out the door, and he dragging himself home. And his wife was sitting there. She's like, how was your day? He's like, oh, it was terrible. I had this and that and this and that. She said, well, don't forget, you said you're going to clean out the garage. He's like, oh no, I don't want, honey, I'm so tired. I'm beat. I'm physically, I was sweating all day long. We didn't have an air conditioner. I'm completely tired. There's no way I could do it. But you promised me, honey. You promised me you'd clean the garage. And then his phone rang. And he picked it up, and it was a buddy, Jim. And he said, hey, partner, tea time's in 15 minutes. Can you be there? And he said, can I be there? I'll be there in 10 minutes. And the moral of the story was, we have all the energy we want to do the things that we want to do, right? It's just there. Yep. It's in us. It'll just bubble out of us. So that's why so many people, unfortunately, they get done with college and they want to pick up a book again. But it's almost a grooming to get you out of education, right? When the reality is we love learning and growing when it's the things that we're interested in.
100%.
The things that give us excitement, our joy, our passion, all that kind of stuff. We want to eat it up. That's where marketing and advertising do it. They'll tell you a two-page ad will always outperform a one-page ad, and a four-page ad will always outperform a two-page ad. An eight-page ad will always outperform a four-page ad, and so on and so forth. And why? Because when you're interested in a topic, then you want to know as much about it as you can, right? Like if you've got, a mole, and you want to get that sucker removed, and you say, how to get rid of moles? You're going to start reading that, and you're going to read all of it, right? Or if you're interested in staining your deck, and your deck's out there and it's not stained and the weather's, it's about to change, you're interested and you're going to read that thing. So we are completely interested. We have abundant amounts of energy for the things that we're interested in. And that's not the way the school system is set up, is it?
No.
No, and that, you know, that, and that goes back to, I mean, I've got a 15-year-old son who'll be 15 in January. And I remember like it was yesterday, how we would go in and we would have a meeting, your parent-teacher conference with Mrs. Beck. And this is in first grade, right? And she's giving me all of his problems, right? And I'm sitting there listening and it's like, why does this feel so familiar? I mean, you know, he's my own DNA, right? So I know what his makeup is. He's just like me. And I remember sitting in school in first and second and third grade, bored out of my mind. I could read at like seventh grade level at like, you know, in first grade, second grade. So I'm just like, it's boring. And what they try to do is they try to make everybody the same. I call public school system indoctrination stations and have for a long time. So I made the ultimate decision, and my wife, God love her, sacrifice, best supportive person, talk about teammate. She is the best teammate I could have ever been blessed to have. We talked really hard about this, and we ended up deciding to homeschool. And it took a lot of sacrifice and a lot of stuff that happens. And but it was because I already saw the writing on the wall. He was going to end up being just like me, where he was going to be bored. He was going to be a troublemaker, and he was going to be deemed a troublemaker simply because it was boring, because he's quicker and he's smarter and he's faster than some of these other kids, but it's boring, right? It's no fun. And then you know what they do now in public school is now they have like 15-minute recesses or no recess at all. I'm just like, that's how.
Well, let's take it a step further. They'll give you a diagnosis of attention deficit disorder, and yep, then they'll put them on Ritalin, which is cocaine.
Yep.
And we have over a million, two, three million children now on cocaine under doctor's care, right? Because it's Ritalin, it's okay. Because they have a lot of energy and they want to get it out and they're expressive and they're bored out of their freaking minds. And what these kids need is they need love and they need sunshine and they get out and play and they need to be doing things they love. The system is broken, completely broken. Why would we keep putting money into broken systems or our children for that matter?
Because the financial education, this goes back to my question earlier, is it by design? Well, the less smart you are with your money, the more likely it is that you're going to be dependent on the system. And the you can be very, very, you know, smart and be dumb at the same time, right? So anyway, not to say that I meant to go down that route, but it just reminded me about these systems, about how here I am, I'm seeing my son going through the same struggles with the same teachers doing the same stuff. I'm like, we got to break the mold. We got to break that whole system. And we made that ultimate sacrifice to do that.
Awesome. Well, I think, guys, it's time for a break. So let's do that. Let's take a break. And when we get back, let's talk to Mason about like what he's doing in his practice today to help people save their money, plan for the future so they can have a good nest egg, something they can rely on and not have to rely on the government when they get into their older age. The senior, what we call it, senioritis, elderly, the golden years, the silver lining. What are we going to call it? Let's call it something cool. I don't know.
Yeah.
What are we going to call it, guys?
The fourth quarter? I don't know.
The fourth quarter. That yeah, because think about it. When you get really old, if you don't take care of your health, now you guys have probably seen this, like you have to have some dough to have somebody else fix your gutters because you can't do it yourself anymore. You might fall off the ladder and break your neck. That actually happened to a friend of mine. His dad died cleaning the gutters, just retired. He had a big old nest egg. But anyway, so that's it. We'll be right back.
You want the absolute best for yourself and you want it to be easy. That's why we created Green 85. It helps with detoxifying the body gently. We're proud it's chemical-free, unlike almost all other supplements you'll find. Bottom line, Green 85 will get you healthier. We look forward to hearing what Green 85 did for you.
To get this product and our other amazing products, go to chemicalfreebody.com. That's chemicalfreebody.com.
What's up, Enrichers? Tim James here with my co-host, Carter Wilcoxon. Again, today in the house, we've got Mason Marozonis. I butchered it.
Morozis.
I was the first guy to pronounce it right, and I can't even say it. So, hey, man, you know, usually this is the section where we flip the script, but I just wanted to give you some time to kind of, like, talk about, like, you know, what you do and how you're helping your clients plan for their future and the now.
Sure, yeah, and I found that the now to be very important as of the last couple of years of experience. But, you know, my big passion, my big target market from where I'm working at now are a lot of people with pension plans. And obviously, you know, you had mentioned the government earlier. What you mean by that, relying on the government, is that Social Security check, you know, every single week. So what we do with these pension plans is kind of, it's the same type of planning, but protecting that, showing them how big it is, some income replacement for a spouse on that side of things for firefighters, teachers, police, you know, military. So that's a big market of ours. And you know, we want to get that right, because when you take $3,000 a month, guaranteed, and then we don't know how long, I mean, we might live until we're 120, 3,000 times 12 times however many years you live after that, that's a huge asset. So that's one of the big ones that we've been focusing on, making sure that people get that right. And, you know, finance is really nothing more special than mathematical terms. So all of these things can be determined by math, you know, other than the unknowns of what the market's going to do. We don't have a crystal ball there, but the math of, you know, pensions and how those work are kind of how we integrate that kind of stuff. And then, you know, my personal, like I mentioned earlier, a big passion of mine is making sure that young professionals that start to get this big paycheck that they haven't seen before, you know, going from maybe their $10 an hour job in high school to college, just getting by for the beer money or whatever they need. They get this first significant check. Well, don't go spend every penny of that. You know, at least save 10, 15% of it. You know, I know the book says 10. If if you can get anywhere from 10 to 20%, just setting aside money for your future self, and you have 40 years to grow that money, you're going to be very happy you did, you know, because I found that in every meeting that I'm in with someone that's over 35 years old, after I got over the, yeah, I look like I'm 20 years old, I've been doing this for 24 hours, but every single time without fail, a 35-year-old that we'd be talking about starting a plan would say, I wish I would have done this 10 years ago. I wish I would have done this when I was 22. Without fail, every single time. So I do not want my coworkers, my, you know, friends, my family to make that same mistake as they start getting this money to come in, because, you know, 50 bucks for a meal, 75 bucks for dinner and drinks this night, it all adds up a lot. So I just,
$800 for a phone.
That's right. Yep. New car. I mean, the average car payment now is like $554 a month. You know, that just not doing that and maybe driving your college car for a couple more years, you've now maxed out a Roth IRA more so for, you know, 3-4 years or however long you want to do that. So the importance there is huge. But I will say, like, defining the balance, I don't know if there is a perfect balance of living in the now and living in the future. I still don't want to be too, you know, setting money aside is all that matters. You still got to go do things for yourself, whether that be for your mental, you know, health, for your physical health, a gym membership, if you use it, I think it's great. That's a great investment. So that's kind of the both sides of the coin. Neglect your future self. But
yeah, anytime you invest in yourself, you're going to get a 6 to 10X return.
Yep.
That's just that's the numbers of it. You mentioned earlier, like you're replacing a $3,000 a month pension. That's $36,000 a year. You'd have to have $900,000 in an account somewhere bearing 4% interest to cover that.
Yep. And that's math, right?
That's just math. So you get it. And then if you can teach them the power of compounding interest and how it grows like grass in the beginning, but then at the end, it's like, poof, man, it takes off like a rocket ship. But, okay. So that's really cool. So I guess the reality here is that you're teaching people reality and getting them to invest in themselves and putting a plan together for them, which is
that's correct. Yeah. Awesome. And you know, one other thing that I'd like to add to that is I never, you know, in these finance classes at KU, they have the brand new business school, all these computers with the stock charts, the technical analysis trading. I haven't really mentioned this word enough because it's an ugly word, but life insurance, how important that is in someone's financial plan is staggering. And I did not realize that until real life experience when I was talking to around a 35, 40 year old who had, you know, he had four kids. His first wife, to save money, four kids are expensive, to save money, one of the first things they canceled was her term insurance. $750,000 of term. And this is a real life story. And I think it was 2 months later, she got diagnosed with cancer, can't get insurance, died 2 years after. And just the look on his face alone when he said, my life would be completely different today if we would not have made that decision, that triggered it for me. That's where the life insurance aspect and financial planning, especially if you're getting married, if you plan on having kids, if you do have kids and you are married, I never thought after all these stocks and compound interest, I never thought I would feel this passion talking about that. But the importance of that in a holistic financial plan, too, is major ever since I heard that story from a real person, a real family.
Yeah, that's hitting home for me because like my little brother was killed in a mountain biking accident. He had two little girls and a bun in the oven and left, a large chunk of tax-free money to my sister-in-law. And without that money, her life would be completely different. It was stressful enough raising three kids on her own.
Yep.
Right. But at least she had that money there to help her, you know, tremendously. But my thing is also, so, you know, it's like I was an insurance agent too. And I know how important life insurance is from first person experience and from dealing with other clients. But when you brought up that story about the gal with cancer, it makes me think about how important health is, because if people understand what the cause of cancer is, then that situation might have never happened. And hopefully she never has to use that life insurance policy. So I think it's a good segue. Why don't we just talk about health? Like, so Mason, what questions do you have for me about health in general?
No, I love that. And I'll just Robin Sharma is one of my favorite authors, and he's got a great little section about health in one of his books, The 5 a.m. Club, which I love. And he said, we all could be billionaires. We could have everything that we wanted on our own island, waitresses, waiters bringing us drinks, bringing us food, anything that we could want. But if we have a sore throat, that's all we can think about. You know, like if the sore throat is the thing that's bothering us, we have $1 billion in the bank. We have everything we could have ever asked for. But if you have a sore throat, it's all you can think about. His point was health is more important than anything you're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. If you don't have health, you don't, you know, it's like the biggest luxury in the world. And we just kind of go through life without taking it for granted. So I've recently, you know, been on my own health journey that I've loved. And I guess the one thing that I'm trying to kick now, which is funny that I mentioned the 5 a.m. club, is I've always been a night person, always. But I know I'm trying to be more professional, get up early, get up, you know, early bird gets the worm with the most successful people in the world. So I guess sleep habits at night. I mean, sleep is extremely important. Getting to bed at the same time, I find myself fighting sleep and like at night, because I want to stay up. I get passionate about things in the nighttime. So
yeah,
any sleep, morning routine, things like that, I know it compounds big time with anything health.
Okay. Well, I think that's a really good question. And I think what's exciting for me is that you have an awareness of wanting change and you want to improve. So hopefully you're wanting to do it for yourself, not just to fit into the 5 a.m. club. But like, let's take a 30,000 foot view. You as a human being, your body's a natural system. We are nature. There is no difference. Like that's where people get disconnected. Like when you want to heal, you get back to nature. Well, we are nature. So you're just plugging your natural body back into the rest of the environment, right? So there's this thing called circadian rhythms of life. Have you ever heard of that?
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. So if you look at your skin, right? We're supposed to be within about 1500 miles of the equator. Cause if it gets cold and snowy, you ain't going to do so good with this little light skin. We don't have fur, like we're not like a grizzly bear, right? So without houses and you know heating units and clothing and stuff like that, we don't fare so well. So we've been able to modify to our environment because of our so-called intelligence that we've used. Sometimes we don't use it so intelligently. All right, so in nature we should be within 1500 miles of the equator, right? The other thing is in nature, before Thomas Edison and the light bulb, or you know, staying up late night at campfires, we would, for the almost in the entirety of time, human beings, and look at all other creatures, when the sun comes up, we would wake up. And when the sun would go down, we would go to sleep, because there wasn't really anything else to do. Like you can't see at night, right? So this is how we are genetically programmed for success, right? So the closer you are to going to bed when the sun goes down, and the closer you are to getting up when the sun comes up. Now, again, I have to say that because when you go up past the 45th parallel or even before that with the time changes and, you know, clock going back, I mean, it's going to be getting dark at like 4:30, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like that's a little
or off. Or the sun's up until 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. So, again, we have to think about the sun and those rhythms closer to the equator, because that's where we should be based on our body type, right? Uh-huh. It's just like, you know, trout live in a cold stream. They don't do as well in, you know, a hot steamy lake, whereas a largemouth bass might grow to 12 pounds there, right? It's different environment, different creatures, right? So with that being said, then you should understand that you the sleep thing is very important, and the sooner you can get to bed. So your statement that you made earlier, like I'm a night person, I can't tell you how many times I hear that in my coaching program from people. Yeah, well, I'm a night person. What time do you go to bed? 12:30, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 12:30, 11:30. You know, I hear this all the time. I'm like, just by you saying I'm a night person, you're tying that shit down.
Yeah.
Okay, the reality is you've been programmed genetically for hundreds of thousands of years to wake up when the sun goes up and go to bed when the sun goes down. That's it. Okay, so that's just a statement that you're making. That's a habit. It's a pattern that you're in. Yeah. But your body is not there yet, because it takes hundreds of thousands of years to make genetic modifications. We're just a little like a fruit fly lifestyle or timeline compared to the whole globe and everything in the history of the earth, which is billions of years old. So with that said, I just hopefully that imparts to you how important it is now I have a logical reason to wake up earlier and to go to bed earlier. So what time do you usually go to bed?
I've been getting better. It fluctuates from 10 to midnight.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. So what, just give me one number, what's your averages right now?
Like of nighttime?
Yeah, when do you go to bed?
Probably 11:30.
Okay, 11:30. So let's just say 11:30. Yeah. So the easiest way to do this, unless you got like stage 4 cancer and your back's against the wall, then we would change it completely. But knock off 30 minutes. 30 minutes. So now your bedtime's 11. Make that, because the reality is like, how do you wake up and feel good? When do you start your day? You start your day in your nighttime routine, right? So what we do is then we program our phone that says bedtime 11, and it's on a repeat to remind the client. And then the subconscious mind gets programmed. But at 10 o'clock, that's when we have another reminder that says prepare for rest. Prepare for rest. Then you have your little checklist of what you do, right? You stop drinking liquids. Turn off fluorescent lights. If you're still on, you know, get away from computer screens. No. Get your phone at least 12 feet away from you. Dim the lights. Read a book. You know, take a sauna. Lay on an acupressure mat. You know, and right before bed, you can take a quick shower and just rinse off. That rinsing off in a cold shower, cold, hot, what doesn't matter, and just drying off helps people sleep better. Cracking your window at night so you've got fresh air while you're breathing. Very important for sleep. So these are things that could be, you know, in your prepare to rest thing. And you make this like so important because you love yourself. That's where it really boils down to. So the people that don't do this, there's a disconnection from taking care of themselves. They start putting everybody else in front of them, take care of the kids first, husband, the wife. I got to get the project done. You know, don't get me wrong. Stuff happens. You know, I might be up late at night if I'm a dad and I'm trying to put together my son's tricycle to surprise him, right? But on a daily basis, you know, or to get a work project done for the big meeting the next day, I get that. But it's the habits, like white-tailed deer, they go into the same field, munch, munch, munch. At this time, they're going to go down to the creek, take a drink. They're very habitual. They're following that circadian rhythm, that cycle of life. And that's the better, the closer you can get to that and have some conscious awareness around that, and then have that plan at night to get to bed and what it takes. And maybe you drink some chamomile tea. That's really good. Putting lavender essential oils on the bottom of your feet. These are things that we teach people to do and to help colicky babies to sleep. And, you know, I have a diffuser that's going all the time, and I'm rotating different essential oils. You know, I've got an air purification system over here right now, purifying my air. I'm breathing amazing air. My feet are barefoot. I'm grounding right now. See my hand? This is a grounding pad. So that's another thing you can do to improve your sleep. Grounding. Are you familiar with grounding or earthing?
Yes. Yeah. As of very recently, I heard about it. It all makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So the earth's natural frequency. And since you're part of the earth and nature, you're disconnected from it. So I'm reconnecting, because outside of every commercial and residential building's an iron rod, and that's bringing that earth's frequency. That's the foundation or the ground, that third prong in the electrical system. And there's mats and blankets with silver threads in them that are all connected, and you plug into that, just the third prong, and you're bringing that frequency in and wrapping yourself up with it at night. And you're literally charging your cells and reducing inflammation and helping you get into your deeper sleep patterns.
Yeah,
right.
That's really good. Yeah.
So there's tons of stuff to do. I have another, I have an episode on sleep on my podcast at the Health Hero Show, if you want to watch it. But those are just a few things you can do about sleep.
Awesome. Yep. I love it. Well, I'll kind of shift that. I got one more. Well, another one for you, kind of, you know, socially. And I'll preface this by saying alcohol and drinking, I think, do have a great place when it comes to helping you be more social, helping you at a type of networking event. I've seen it come into play way more than I expected to in my early career. Like at every work event, at every party that it's still Christmas party, whatever it is, you know, I cannot stand the hungover feeling. I cannot stand that the next day. I do like being more social and having a glass or two of wine, or, you know, some nights three or four.
Right.
What's your take on alcohol and how to do it the most efficiently, you know, the most efficient way possible? Because I think for a lot of people, going cold turkey on something, even if they wanted to, is difficult on something like that.
This is a great question. I've had this brought up a few times, but it's a really, really great question. So number one, you think when you get out of college, your drinking's done. It's not. Because every social party and stuff like that, it's alcohol, where's the wine, where's the booze? People are bringing wine to the parties, they're drinking, they're having a good time. And it's just because it was part of the school system, right? It's part of the indoctrination. It's like you see the Michelob commercial and it's got a bunch of fit, young, healthy people running on the beach. But the reality is the people that are drinking the beer all the time are overweight and they're not happy. And there's the term wife beater comes to term. So, you know, I drank a lot. I wasn't like an alcoholic, but like when I would go out, I would freaking hit. I mean, I'd have 15 pints of Grey Goose. You know, after 15, I would kind of like, you know, didn't really function that well. But, you know, up to 15, I was doing pretty good.
Right? Sure.
We were always looking for the perfect combination, my buddy and I. So we won't even get into that whole thing. But, you know, looking back after I had my kind of my breakthrough when I went to that detox and nutrition clinic when my buddy got cancer, I started reflecting on my life and I realized that everything in my life that was really bad that had happened was all alcohol related. And I just decided in that moment, I'm done. And since 2011, I mean, I've drank less than 20 times in the last 11 years, 20 times. And it's just every once in a while, if I like randomly pick something up, it's like my girlfriend, my wife's like, what are you doing? You know, it's like, I don't know, just decided I wanted to do it. And then sometimes I drink half of it and I don't want it. You know, another time I was up picking mushrooms with my buddy, my friends and stuff. And I had like 8 shots of Pendleton whiskey and I'm like, I wasn't buzzed, but the reality is you brought up a big point is like, I like to wake up and feel good. I really do. Yeah. Actually another guy, who's a builder up here, he's never drank in his whole life. And I said, Leon, how come you never drink? He said, well, Tim, I'm a control freak. You see? And, he goes, I don't like being out of control. And when you're drunk and drinking, you're out of control and you don't know what's going to happen to you, or you could hurt somebody, and you look at the drunk driving, all these things that are happening. And he goes, so that's why I've never drank, because I'm a control freak and I want to be in control of my life. And I was like, wow, okay, that's cool. So, and again, I'm not poo-pooing or putting down the drinking stuff, but when I was a financial advisor, when I was in the mortgage industry, there was a gal who was a $1 million producer. She did a million. Well, she did a multi-million. She was making a million commissions, W-2 commissions a year. One of the top loan officers. And guess what her marketing strategy was? She had 2 open houses with an open bar for real estate agents twice a month at these really nice bars. All the food and the drinks that you could want. And then once a month she had a party at her house and she had a theme party. Like you had to wear like, you know, pajamas. And if you showed up with no pajamas, she sent you home. And she basically just get drunk with a bunch of realtors and built relationships. So here's the problem with that. The problem with that is that the alcohol, you're using that to open up your pathway to your true and natural self. That's what you're doing. You're opening up your pathway to your true and natural self with alcohol. And so your light comes out and you shine, but then, you know, too much drinking and you can kind of, you know, turning into a blithering idiot too and start spilling stuff and stealing poinsettias and get caught on tape. I mean, this has happened to a top real estate agent that he's like, oh, I didn't steal it. And they're like, we have you on tape, dude. Right. It's like, because he got drunk and he asked out, right. He wasn't himself. He wasn't in control, like Leon said. But the big problem is that you wake up the next morning and you can't remember how you got to that person who is you. Because what's happening is we're going inwards. We're inwards. Our universe is shrinking. It's contracting. We're not expanding. So what ended up happening was I stopped drinking and I started going out, still going to the parties and doing the stuff, you know, and meeting with people. And since I was uncomfortable by not drinking, I made everybody else uncomfortable too. Well, Tim, aren't you drinking? Well, no, I'm getting healthy and I'm doing all this stuff. And it created tension. As soon as I got over all that and they're like, aren't you here? Do you want to, like, my friend's like, hey, let me buy you a drink. I'm like, oh, I'm not drinking tonight, Jim. He's like, oh, I'll get you a drink. I said, no, I'm really not drinking. What do you mean you're not drinking? What are you talking about? You drinking? Come on. You know, he's like, well, I'll get you a beer at least. I'm like, no, I'm not drinking. And he just wouldn't let up. I'm like, well, you can get it if you want to, but it's okay. But what I found out was a lot of people are like, wow, I wish I could do that. That's so cool. So as soon as I changed my perception of it, and I didn't make it a big deal, it's just a choice. I'm just like, I gave up drinking 11 years ago because I turned into Jekyll and Hyde and good things don't happen with drunk Tim, right? And tomorrow I want to wake up and feel good, or I've got something tomorrow, or I'm doing a 30-day challenge, right? Whatever, no alcohol. Oh, cool. Yeah, I need to do that, you know? But the reality is everybody wants to wake up and feel good. And they also want to connect. That's where that book came out, How to Win Friends and Influence People. The number two thing in the book was, and when they interviewed that Middletown America, was, hey, look, that people wanted to connect and learn how to connect with other people and relate. People have a hard time doing that because the system has separated us. It's all about division. We have to realize if we start loving ourselves, we start loving our friends. I can get along with you. Like if we go to a buffet and let's say you order chicken and I order the vegan lasagna, do we freak out? You know, when you go to a buffet and people get different foods, nobody says nothing. But when you like if you don't drink and somebody else is drinking, why? I don't understand why that's such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because we make it a big deal. So if you feel weird inside about not drinking, you feel also that you need to connect and you need that alcohol to kind of, you know, get rid of that anxiety, then what I would suggest is you find a different method. Right. And maybe I don't know what that is. For me, it was just, I do a lot of meditation. I do a lot of breath work and I just start talking to people about things that really matter, you know, and asking them questions about themselves, you know, family, occupation, recreation, dreams, the Ford method or whatever. Just get into conversations with people and it's just like, you drinking? No, I'm not drinking. Are you sure? Yeah, it's no big deal. Why not? Well, I just don't feel like it tonight. So how's your family, Bill? You know, how long you been here? And just move over it. Don't make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow morning you'll wake up and guess what? On your way home, you don't have to worry about getting pulled over by the cops and getting a Dewey. And then when you wake up, you're going to feel real good. And everybody else is going home worried about getting pulled over to get a Dewey. And then when they wake up, they feel like crap. And their kids are pulling on, come on, daddy, let's go play. Give me 2 more hours. Right. Yeah. And
that goes along with the How I Met Your Mother. How much time? Well, how much time did you spend hungover where you can't be productive or spend time with your family? You know, it all adds up.
Yeah, it really does. So it's choices.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I'll just jump in real fast. Here's the other thing about that is it's going to be really difficult to call yourself a morning person if you're calling yourself a night person. Right. And it's hard to be a morning person if you're embracing that lifestyle, if you will. Right. And I get it. Are you kidding me? You know, I have to entertain for business on a regular basis and it's difficult, but I can promise you this. When I don't drink at an event or whatever, and I wake up the next day, I don't berate myself. I congratulate myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's an accomplishment.
Yes. And it absolutely is. And, you know, going back to my son, Carter Samuel, we have this saying that his mom, you know, tells him all the time, you know, cause he's still 14, getting ready to be 15. He still makes bonehead mistakes or whatever. You know, she tells him all the time, or he goes to a personal trainer 2 days a week. And she's like, you can do hard things. And you just reinforce it. You can do hard things. You can do hard things. And, you know, just reinforcing it on a regular. And guess what? Not drinking one time at an event can be a hard thing, but you can do hard things. You can tell yourself you're not going to. I like that idea, what you just said, Tim, right? To kind of make yourself feel better. And maybe you do this. Maybe you make your own. I'm on a 30-day challenge, Bill. That's why I'm not drinking. I'm on a 30-day challenge. They immediately were like, oh, man, I wish I could do it. And congratulations, man. You know, good for you. And, you know, let me know how it goes. That connects you to people, right? Being able to do that. And others that will, they'll self-eliminate. Someone's like, that would ever be like, you're crazy. A 30-day, you know, challenge, not drinking. Forget that. They'll self-eliminate. Maybe not the kind of client you want anyway.
Yeah, another thing you can do too in the beginning as you work building up your courage muscle into this situation is you can just get club soda with a splash of cranberry in it and some lime squeezed in it and drink that, and then people just, you know, just light on the ice. People think you're drinking a drink, I'm past that point now. And the cool thing is like being able to go out and have a good time and dance or whatever without alcohol is amazing, right? And I think all this stuff is like, the more you follow your highest excitement in life, whatever that is, the more synchronicities come to your life, and the happier you're going to be, and the more joy. And you just find out that you just don't really need that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I'm really happy. I really like having clarity. That's really important to me. You know, I don't, I don't miss hangovers at all. I don't miss getting the spins. I don't miss worrying about driving home. I don't miss any of that stuff. Like any of
well,
it.
Well, you just hit on something, Tim, that I think is actually coincides with what you were saying earlier, Mason, right? I don't know how I'm paraphrasing here. I don't know how many times I've talked to this 35-year-old and I talked about doing all this stuff. Man, I wish I would have started when I was 25. And here's the thing. You get tired of that as you get older, right? I'll be 50 again in January. And if you think about it, you're like, man, I wish I would have had that courage sooner about not wanting the spins. And typically it's just like, I just can't do it anymore. Not that you want to do it anymore. She's like, I can't. But if only, and I'm just tying this back into what your clients at 35, man, they wish they would have started sooner. I promise your body will thank you. The sooner you start on 30-day challenge, it turns into 30 months, and then it turns into 30 years, whatever the case may be. And I get it. There's a lot of influence that happens, and you know, you have Christmas parties and every, you know, so you start thinking to yourself, well, if nobody drank, what would that be like? Mm-hmm. I'll bet you'd all still have a good time.
I agree. Yeah, I like those ideas. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So anyway, Tim, do you have anything else you want to throw in there before we let our enrichers get going out of here? I know you wanted to touch a little bit on the Lithuania thing because of the Hippocrates Institute, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I was asking Mason where his – because the last name – Where was that from? He said Lithuania. So actually, the place that I went to is called the Hippocrates Health Institute. So when I first started this journey, I was 42 pounds overweight and had all these skin health issues and all this stuff. My buddy had cancer. It was actually started by a gal named Ann Wigmore. She was actually from Lithuania. And she grew up a very sickly child. And her surrogate grandmother was the village doctor at the time. And her parents had saved up enough money to come to the United States, and they started a bakery business. And so then the surrogate grandmother raised Anne in Lithuania and saved up pennies and pennies and pennies until one day she could send her over to America to be with her mom and dad. So anyway, it's a much longer story, but I mean, it was crazy stuff. Like Anne said, when she was a kid, the war came through and the grandmother took her and some other kids and they lived in a ditch for a couple days. And she was like, don't worry about food. We have this, and they were eating the roots of grass and you know, not the grass itself, or in the tubers and, you know, leaves and stuff that grandma was showing them that were natural and they could eat. It kept them alive, actually made them healthier. And then Ann came to the United States, got into a horrible cart and buggy accident when she was in her late teens and mangled her legs. And they took her down to Mass General Hospital and they said, well, there's not much we can do. Bring her back in a couple weeks and we'll amputate her legs. We'll cut her legs off. So her parents, you know, had to run this business. So they were a bakery business. So like 3-4 in the morning, they were like literally 3 in the morning, they would put Anne on a park bench in the city and just leave her there in the dark. And they would go to the bakery, do that, and then come back and pick her up in the afternoon and take her home. And that's all they could do. And I was thinking, well, I wonder why they just leave her home, but whatever. That's what happened. So Anne couldn't move, but what she could do is she could reach under the bench and she could find the grass. So she took the grass and chewed it, swallowed the juice, the chlorophyll from the juice, and then she took the poultice and started packing her wounds with it. Every day she packed her wounds with fresh grass poultice, and she ends up healing her legs. Crazy story. And then sticks to the standard American diet, and then in her mid-50s, she developed stage 4 colon cancer, and then she thought, maybe I should go back to the grasses and the herbs that my grandma taught me. And she did, and then she healed herself of stage 4 colon cancer, and she couldn't even hardly speak English. And so she started teaching people that, I mean, she healed herself with basically lawn grass, right? It's crazy, right? But when you study it, it's amazing, right? So, and then all these people came into her life and the synchronicities, and the Hippocrates Health Institute was born. It's been around over 65, 66 years, and they've had over 600,000 people through the door. And from her grandmother passing that on to Anne, went to Charles and me. And then, you know, now I've shared this with thousands and thousands of people. So it's really kind of cool how that grandmother in Lithuania, whoever taught her, this stuff has been handed down, which is basically getting back to nature. And, you know, the foods are for the herbs are for the healing of the nation. Right. So it's kind of a biblical quote, but Anyway, that's kind of the Ann Wigmore story, Carter, in a nutshell.
Well, I knew that you know, because you're like, that's an interesting last name. Where's that from? Because I think you said, is that Greek originally, right?
Yeah, yeah. And he said, no, Lithuanian. Yeah. Yeah.
Mason's like, no, Lithuanian. So,
I haven't heard too many cool Lithuania stories like that. That tops the list for sure.
Cool. Well, brother, hey, thanks for being on the show today. We really appreciate you. You have really good energy. I know you're doing a really good job. So if you guys are in the local area where Mason is, he'd probably be a pretty darn good person to hitch your wagon to help out with your financial needs. Guy you can trust, he'll do his best. And he was taught by one of the top 1%ers. So, yeah, that age thing's kind of out the door because you have a work ethic and you're modeling success already. So it's a no-brainer. They're actually tapping into that other guy by tapping into you too. So they're getting more than just you. They're getting the whole team there.
That's right. And I'm building my way up that percentage list of the top. So I'll get there soon.
That's cool. I bet you will. You'll be there.
Thanks for having me on today. It was really fun. And I learned a lot. I learned more than I probably gave. So that's a bonus for me.
I think we all learned. That's good.
Yeah. That was sort of like the whole purpose of, the Health and Wealth podcast was to be able to learn from one another. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way you do it is with stories and conversations and, you know, ideas and opinions and things of that nature. So Mason, we really do appreciate you coming on. Hey, and Richards, thank you so much for joining us for another fantastic podcast. If you want to be able to see any of our previous podcasts, make sure to go to our website at www.thehealthandwealthpodcastshow.com and also like, share, and subscribe. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, as well as our own YouTube channel. You can also be able to go to our Instagram page, Health and Wealth Podcast. And for my esteemed, wonderful co-host, Mr. Tim James, Mr. Chemical Free Body himself, we want to thank Mason Morozas for being on the show again today in Texas. Check him out in the show notes. You'll be able to see the website and find him if you want to be able to get in contact with him. Thank you again. Make sure to join us again for another Health and Wealth podcast show next, and have a great, wonderful, abundant life. Thank you, everybody. Hey, Enrichers. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Health and Wealth podcast. I'm your host, Carter Wilcoxon.
And I'm your host, Tim James. And by God, we are committed to helping you guys have fat wallets, flat bellies. So tune in again for another episode and make sure to like, share, and drink a lot of water.
Or beer.
You have just listened to the Health and Wealth Podcast with Carter and Tim.